Hello everyone, and welcome to this episode of Education for Climate Talks. Today's episode is about teacher training, educator empowerment, and whole school approaches to sustainability. And for today's theme, I here have with me Arshin Walls. He is a professor of transformative learning for socio-ecological sustainability. That's a long one. Arshin, welcome to you. Before we dive into today's theme, perhaps you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you know something about this.
Yeah, thank you, Trine. Arjen Walls, I'm a professor at Wageningen University in the Netherlands and a UNESCO chair in the field of environmental and sustainability education. I've always been interested in environmental issues since the early career. And over time, that has become more sustainability oriented. So I'm concerned about how to connect people more with planet and places, futures, and using education as a key approach to building a kind of ecological literacy and a kind of citizenship that can help us live more lightly on this earth in a more equitable way, preserving health and well-being. And that's my mission, you might say. And I do this through teaching and research, but also helping policymakers and people who want to govern in different ways in organizations and communities. So from early childhood all the way up to people who are of older age, working with different groups in society, also with schools.
Yeah, all right. And what is it that education can, when it comes to sustainability and climate change?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's a lot. I mean, education traditionally has already done a lot to change the earth and the planet. Typically, education contributes to innovation. It contributes to preparing people for the world of work, for life. And every decision we make has an impact on the environment, has social impacts and implications. So in some ways, you could say education has always been about sustainability. Unfortunately, it has accelerated unwillingly unsustainability by not taking into account the consequences of our lifestyles and innovations and technologies for the ecology, the environment, the climate. And we're now beginning to discover that education has actually driven in many ways unsustainability by just focusing on the economy. So education is very foundational in the kinds of lives we choose to live and the way we accelerate maybe technologies that are maybe good for making life more pleasant, easier, more entertaining. But at the same time, at a huge expense, both socially, in that often these benefits are not distributed evenly across people. Some people clearly benefit more than others, and some people live in areas where we extract the resources to develop all these products and technologies, leaving them literally abandoned in the empty mines. And that is not sustainable. So education can help build the ecological literacy, the social consciousness, the awareness of the importance of connecting with nature, allowing future generations to also have a quality life. And that means that we need to think about competencies and qualities that people need to live more lightly and equitably on this planet.
I read in one of your research articles, there is a quote, schools have a critical role to play in preparing young people to cope with and operate within a changing and uncertain world. Ideally, education not only prepares young people for the world of work, but also helps them become self-actualized members of society, living meaningful lives. And I think this one sort of struck a chord with me, especially when you think about eco-anxiety and young people being little citizens of the world, and climate change is being thrown at us from all angles as this sort of big evil entity, and it's too late, and all that kind of rhetorics. So this quote, what does it mean when we talk about eco-anxiety and giving young people the opportunity to live meaningful lives more than just helping them create livelihoods for themselves?
Yeah. I think there are two points here in this quote. One has to do with the self-actualized members of society, which I think education is not about telling people how to live their lives. People have the right to self-determination and to become autonomous members of society that are, of course, live in relations with others and with materials and other species. So that relational aspect is very important. You become who you are based on the interaction and relations that you have. So the relationships that are being formed in our lives are critical. And if we only have, for instance, relationships with the digital technology, that determines a way, how we interact and how we come maybe removed from nature and other people. So the one aspect is, how is education about helping people to become more mindful and caring and considerate and contemplative, thinking about who am I in the world? Who do I want to become? Am I nudged to become somebody else I don't really want to be? Or what keeps me from becoming who I want to be? That could be poverty or the environment in which we live, or it could be the people we are surrounded with. So to become critical of that is a role of education. Not to have a moralizing finger saying, you shouldn't do this, this is how you should live your life. Education is not about training to throw a can in the right basket. That's training and conditioning, which is also a tool and important, but that's not what education primarily is to do. Education is about developing the qualities and competencies that allow you to live meaningfully in this world, becoming the person you want to be and can be without compromising the possibility for others to also do that. And that's where the sustainability comes in.
Yeah, and to make sure that whatever we do is within planetary boundaries.
Yeah, so and the other aspect, I didn't get to that, that has to do with the anxiety. And that's a very good question. I mean, there are the world is troubled by many things. It's in some way, you know, the runaway climate change is certainly affecting many people's lives. Many, you know, a quarter of a billion young people cannot always go to school due to hot temperatures or due to flooding or extreme weather events. It's very literally affecting education already. But it's also impossible, I think, for children, young children, difficult, let's say that way, to remain hopeful. There's also a loss of democracy in many countries. There's polarization. There's extreme wealth inequality happening. There's loss of biodiversity. We're losing species left and right. We might be reaching tipping points where we are overstepping planetary boundaries in such a way that we can hardly predict anymore what will happen. You know, we're talking about the warming of oceans, the loss of coral reefs, the loss of rainforest, the loss of all kinds of functions in the ecosystem that are critical for all life. And when that is happening, it might accelerate also these social problems that we have. So we need to really rethink the economy and rethink how we teach and learn together. And we have a window still of opportunity to do that, but that window is closing. So there are different ways to approach this question of anxiety. I mean, you might say children, you know, should not be bothered with these big problems that adults have been causing. It's not fair to them. And it's actually not healthy to be exposed at a young age to these big complicated problems. We should protect them from these problems. And many schools and school systems are trying to do that. They're actually saying, we're not going to go there because it's just too overwhelming. Besides, we have to teach reading, writing, science, and arithmetic, so there's no space. That's one response. Another response, which we also see, is to say, children are already exposed to these problems. They see it. They see it in the news. They hear about it, bits and pieces. So we have a responsibility as educators to help them cope with these problems. We need to give them the tools to overcome anxiety and to be able to speak about their insecurities, their worries, to help them deal with this complexity and this uncertainty. So it's part of education. And in this world, it's essential that we bring it into the classroom. And while they address and talk and discuss and look for possibilities to make change in themselves and their local environment, they also need to learn mathematics and reading and writing and arithmetic. But only now you can learn these different, you know, these subjects in a more meaningful, relevant context to the everyday lives.
Yeah. All right. And this leads me a bit to another part in your article where you and the other authors, you write, education as usual will not prepare students to meet these challenges. Schools need to rethink everything, from education goals and curriculum content to how teachers teach, how students learn, and how the school connects with the wider community. And there are two things here I would like to talk about, but first is teacher training and how teachers teach. And why I want to talk about this is also because one of my personal friends is a school teacher, and she told me that climate change and sustainability and all of that can be quite overwhelming for, let's say, a music teacher teaching 5 to 6 year olds music. You know, like climate change and all that is very far away. So for a lot of teachers, it's also actually kind of, you know, complex for them. And what can we do? When we say that teachers need to maybe rethink how they teach and what kind of teaching methods is out there?
Yeah.
Over to you.
Well, yeah, that's all very good questions. I think, when we think about school teachers, we see that they are also in a way trapped in a system that focuses very much on testing, measuring, accountability, following a structured curriculum, often a national curriculum, with a little freedom to make the curriculum more connecting to the live world of young people and the local environment. And these sustainability questions around loss of biodiversity, around extreme weather events, around maybe lack of appreciation of difference, where people also don't know how to deal with conflict, bullying, all these things, they are so present in our everyday lives, but they hardly become part of the curriculum. So the music teacher is a good example. I don't think all music teachers should be teaching climate change or teaching young people to learn more about climate change. What they can do, because it's a music teacher, it should be about music. And music is also about listening. It's about harmony. It's about resonance. It's about finding your voice. There are so many things that represent qualities that are needed to live more sustainably on this earth. Attentiveness, not being distracted by technology. During music, you can maybe also get away from the stress and the anxiety. So the question, what do I have to do with sustainability as a music teacher? Well, everything. It's critical. And that's how we need to rethink how we teach and learn. We need to not see the teaching as a subject that we need to transfer to an empty vessel. You know, these are living beings, humans that are yearning for connection, and music can be a critical there. And this, we can talk about arts, we can talk about mathematics, we can learn about exponential growth of plastics in the ocean. And, you know, if you want to learn about exponential growth in mathematics and statistics, the likelihood of things happening, you can learn all these things using mathematics or statistics as well. You can teach social justice by the numbers, so to speak. Looking in neighborhoods, where are the electric car chargers in a neighborhood, and where are they maybe absent, and why are there so many in that neighborhood and not any over there? Why is that unequal distribution? What's underneath? So that's a part of that. And the other part, I think, is not to just learn about things that are maybe doom and gloom and negative, but to turn sustainability into something creative, energizing, and hopeful. There are so many examples of schools, of communities that are trying to become greener, more considerate about healthy diets and food. They're trying, you know, there are schools that redesign their school grounds with children's input and empowerment and agency coming in so that they feel they have a voice and an influence, working with local gardeners and gardening centers and local farmers maybe. There are swap and repair shops in some schools in the Netherlands and in Belgium where they work with sometimes elderly people fixing bikes, fixing old vacuum cleaners, learning about how they work and showing that you can give things a second life, that you can make the economy more circular. So it's a whole living environment around us, and our teacher training needs to tap into that. We need to learn in teacher education how to utilize the local environment, how to live, work with the living environment and the life world of the young people and get to know the life world better. Then I think that the schools can become the beating heart of the community rather than a place that people dread going to, that teachers don't want to go to, parents complain about, kids don't want to go to, which we see all too often. There are sources of stress, anxiety, understaffed, under-resourced. And I think by focusing on sustainability issues in a positive way, not moving away from the complexity, because it is complex and we need to learn to live with complexity, rather than trying to tame it or minimize it. I sometimes say it's, you know, education is often about simplifying matters, but it should become more about complicating matters. And that sounds a bit intuitive, you know, it's counterintuitive in a way, but I think it's very fundamental that we see the intricate entanglement of everything, how everything is related and interconnected, and that we need to learn systems thinking as a competence that is critical for sustainable development.
So, yeah, what you just talked about now is basically the whole school approach, right? Where you think sustainability into everything, from what you serve in the cantina to involving the community around the school. And that's what I wanted to ask a bit about as well. The whole thing about teachers connecting with the wider community, because that sort of means that you take teachers out of the school building. And, you know, and now we're trying to nudge them to interact with the wider community for the purpose of sustainability. And can you put a few words to what is that? What does that look like? Or maybe you have some examples.
Yeah, well, first, the whole school approach is a kind of a response to what we've seen over the last 50 years in education. You know, 50 years ago, about 50 years ago, we got environmental education and nature conservation education, but also peace education, human rights education, health education, consumer education. There are all these educations that have to do something with sustainability. And 50 years ago, we did not have that word sustainability. But we saw in society all kinds of agendas that said, well, you know, young people need to know something about health, about water, about nature, about citizenship. And we need to go to the schools and come up with a curriculum or lessons that we can add on to the curriculum so that schools pay attention to all these topics. through projects, maybe a chapter in a teaching method here and there. So what happened was we kept piling on all these topics that we thought, or people thought, or different streams in society thought were important that schools should do something with. And that led to a kind of resistance. Schools saying, you know, we cannot be society's, you know, dumping ground for all these problems that are in the world. We have our hands full already. So rather than having an add-on, we need to go to built-in. And a whole system redesign where it's not so much about all these topics, it's more about the qualities and competencies people need. So in terms of competencies, systems thinking, futures thinking, perspective changing, those are critical, conflict management, having dialogue, how do you do that? But and qualities, having empathy, solidarity, those are qualities that we don't emphasize much at all. So rather than saying we need to add on topics, we need a kind of an ethos, a culture, the kind of leadership and vision that can help us as a school to become a friendly mind and life affirming place where people learn about the world and about themselves in a more holistic, integrated way. And this whole school approach is basically at the heart. We use the flower model that we've developed also with my PhD in Norway, Rosalie Mati, to help people have that conversation. So at the heart, there's ethos, the culture, the leadership, and then around the petals of the flower, pedagogy and learning, like place-based learning, social learning, transformative learning. There are all these forms of learning that are much more relational. And then there's also the professional development of staff, the teachers. What kind of competencies do they need to teach system thinking, for instance? But not just the teachers. There's also people cleaning the building, people maintaining the grounds. They are also staff. So what does it mean for their professional development? And then also looking at the relation between the school and the community. How do we work with the local bike store? We had to do a repair cafe where we also have maybe a workshop every now and then by the person who from the bike store who can teach the children how to fix a tire or repair a chain or something like that. That means you need to have good relationships with the local environment, the local government. How do we develop those relationships? And then also, how do we walk the talk as a school or as a university? What do people eat in the school? What kind of snacks do the young children bring? What do their parents give them? Can we have a green roof that holds water better or cools the building? Or can we have solar panels? And how many then? Can we involve the children or the students in figuring out how many do we need? Can we ourselves enact all the things that we find important in our own practice? How do we travel to school? Can we do something about that? Etc., etc. So these are petals. Professional development, pedagogy and learning, relation with the school community, walking the talk, and the last one is then the curriculum, which is also important. Is it a national curriculum or more localized curriculum? Do we talk about certain topics in the curriculum, like a circular economy? Is that in our economics education at all, or is it completely absent? If so, then how can we bring it in? Biomimicry, learning from nature. And with nature, where is it? If it's nowhere, how can we bring it in? So this is how this whole school approach unfolds. And we see that the European Union, UNESCO, UNECE, at the international level are really trying to promote for this more integrated approach. And we see in many countries that at the local and national level, this more integrated approach is gaining ground and getting more attention.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure you. What you just said now is maybe a part of those five key lessons that you and your team sort of. You did a big research. You talked to a lot of schools, and then you came up with sort of five key lessons for schools that want to transition towards a whole school approach. And if
We don't have a lot of time, I suppose, but I can be quick. You know, I think there are five important And there are probably more lessons, but one is that we need to have more faith in the abilities of teachers and young people. They have a lot of ideas of their own. And often we think that by shifting some of the responsibility of the learning, of the teaching to the young people and the teachers, that we somehow lose control as a school board or as a national government or a ministry of education, and that maybe they won't learn enough. But evidence shows that if you give people more autonomy and more voice in what they learn and how they learn, they are much more motivated and they immerse themselves more in the learning. So they learn better. Also, when there's outdoor learning, there's things that you cannot predict. You don't know exactly what will happen, but typically when young people are outdoors, they have different conversations. They develop a different kind of vocabulary. They talk more to each other. They learn better, and they can concentrate better when they go back into school. A lot of people who have ADHD nowadays have diagnosis in all kinds of psychological challenges, let's call it that, and they tend to learn better when they spend more time outdoors. So have faith in letting go of control over everything. That's one lesson. The other one is that the complexity is not something that we should be afraid of, but that we should learn to live with. So it's good to when you talk about solar panels on top of the roof of a school, that you look at who makes those panels, what kind of rare earth metals are being used for that panel, how do we position them on the roof, what angle, how many do we need, do we purchase them from South Korea or from China, or what part, which ones are the more sustainable one, how were they produced, where there was the fair labor involved, so that you invite in a way all the angles which you can use to look at solar panels. If we save money, how do we spend that money in the school? Can we have the young people help decide how that money can be spent on sustainability? So you look for the connections with all the SDGs in a way to whatever you do. So that's the second. So not so much simplifying, but also complicating matters. The third, I think we talked about hope. Focus on the things you can change in yourself, in your local environment. Look for schools that are already doing things in this kind of positive, green, sustainable, mindful way, where you see that also the learning results and the educational outcomes are becoming better in those kinds of schools. And that's not utopian. That's not something far in the future. It already exists, but you have to look for it to find it and then to be inspired by it, to learn from it. I call them nowtopias. You know, it's already there. So look for that. And the third, maybe the fourth, has to do with ethics and moral compass. We need to think about what is our moral compass? How does what we do strengthen sustainability, or maybe it strengthens unsustainability? How mindful is it of other people, other species, future generations? And that we don't just think about ourselves and taking care of ourselves or our own people or something like that, which is another moral compass that's not helpful for sustainable development. And maybe the last one is the professional development of all staff, that we make sure that teacher education, in-service education, allows for system thinking, futures thinking, working with students' voice more, place-based education, social learning. All these things are there, but we need to bring that into the teacher education and the professional development. So these are the five main lessons.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. I think we are at an end, but before we end, I just want to ask one last question. Ashin, if you were a teacher at a little local school somewhere in Europe where there's not a lot of money and perhaps also not a big top-down support for sustainability education, but you are a teacher with a burning passion for sustainability. If it was you, where would you start? First step.
Well, if you are in a under conditions that are not so favorable to this way of teaching and learning and educating that we're talking about, but you do have where there is not many resources, you have to look at what is there a lot of anyway. Well, there's a lot of what you say, personal passion and commitment. So that's just the key starting point. Without that, you wouldn't go anywhere. The second, I think, is where do you have your own sphere of control? Often that's your own classroom. You can create as a teacher a certain atmosphere in the classroom where the young children have maybe more space for voice and they can bring in their own issues and topics. A third thing, if it's a poverty-stricken area, is to look at how do people cope with this poverty and their everyday life struggles. What can we, in some ways, people who live under harsh conditions, they know a lot more about circularity than people who live under very difficult, under very luxurious conditions. They've lost that whole circular thinking. So there's also a lot of capacity and potential to learn from how do you become resilient under difficult circumstances. And in some ways, there's a lot we I think can learn from people living under difficult conditions, because they have to live in a way sustainable lives, not by choice, let me emphasize that, by force, which is also to say that this is not that this is not what we should romanticize or glorify in any way. But what I am trying to say is that there are certain qualities and capacities that have been developed that are really important, that can also be appreciated, and so that's another starting point. Look not so much at the community as deficient, but rather as very very rich with capacity and potential for sustainability. So flip it in a way, and also if the curriculum of the school is undersourced, if textbooks do not have the quality, or if the digital technologies that maybe in richer environments are plenty available, you could say, well, there's an advantage to the analog as well instead of the digital. And there's an advantage to having natural intelligence over artificial intelligence. So why don't we, we see all the struggles in modern classrooms where people are completely glued to their screens, they're psychic numbing, there's no connection with the local environment. So a lot of things have been lost that are still in other conditions are still very present. So how do we move towards a more hybrid way where we can blend the natural intelligence with the artificial intelligence, where there's place-based connections and learning, while also taking advantage of some of these innovations that might help us connect better. But we have to be very critical of those too.
Yes, thanks. So what I hear you say is there can be lots of wisdom in local knowledge. Think about use of tech. Maybe the analog is not so bad. Bring it outside in nature. Snoop out if there are other passionate people around. You can sort of create a
yeah,
and
look
with,
for look and, for those newtopian, yeah. There's nowtopias, because also in
and
the,
look,
those
look
conditions
for the
are
yeah. Yes.
And it's also, it helps for that lonely teacher to connect through networks, through other teachers who are in similar situations. There are lots of niches out there. If you can create synergies between the niches, it will become a movement.
Yes. All right. Well, Ashin, I think we're gonna stop on this positive note and think a bit about Nowtopias. Thank you very much for the talk. It was very interesting.
Thank you, Trine, and well, look forward to the final product.